Good morning. Welcome to the Order of Time. Today I would like to talk about creation, the creation. We are all a part of what we call the creation, and we have many ideas about this, how this creation came about. We have especially religious notions about it, about the world being created by God in 7 days, as we know it from the Jewish tradition. We know the story of creation as we have it from India, that Vishnu is there as the first person of God, breathing out the universe. And we have our scientific notions of the Big Bang and how everything came about from that happening billions of years ago. So, what to think about all this? What would be the truth, the philognostic truth, when we love the knowledge, when we are honest philosophically, what should we say to this? The world we're in can be simply described as a reality of time, space, and matter. These are three basic constituents, substances, elements of the creation. And this is how the world looks like. We have material forms separated by space that are on the move. Nothing is static. Everything is on the move. And this movement we call the life of the universe, and it's also called time. So this is the basic reality we talk about: time, space, and matter. So there are three elements, basic elements concerned in this. We discussed this before. And there's also a fourth element, which must be mentioned when we want to describe the creation, as we know it also of religion, and as we know it also of our own person. There's a fourth element, which describes the integrity of this time, space, and matter. We are not just space, we are not just matter, we are not just material forms moved by time. We are also belonging to the integrity of this time, space, and matter. We ourselves as people, as embodied souls, are integrities of time, space, and matter. The whole universe is an integrity of time, space, and matter. So this integrity is closely associated with the concept of the person and the soul. We, from the soul, the eternal witness, deep inside of us, we are aware of our bodies, of the time, of the space, and the matter. And this awareness is a reflection of that completeness of the entire universe. So, from the beginning, according to the classical stories, God, as a person, would be there to create the universe. So this from the beginning, there was this integrity of time, space, and matter, which we cannot deny. The integrity was there from the beginning as soon as the elements rose. These elements cannot exist without each other. You cannot have matter without time, or space and without matter. It has no meaning. If you cut out the time, space and matter do not make any sense, because there's no perception of it possible when nothing moves. And then you have a static universe without any creation. And there's no, in fact, no universe at all, because when there's no time, how can anything come about? It is not possible to separate one of these elements from this tripartite of reality, this threefoldness of the reality. And this, the same way, we cannot separate these different elements from the integrity of these elements, which we call the person or the soul or God. So God was there as a person from the beginning. This is a philosophical choice you make. We describe the reality we see before us, and we cannot exclude ourselves as integrities of consciousness and completeness. So this we call the person. So we have small persons, small souls, small witnesses like you and me, separated and locked up in individual bodies. But there's also the greater integrity of the entire universe, which you may also consider a person. It is the greater integrity, the greater soul, and the original person, the original reality of God. So this is very essential to the understanding of our creation stories, and the stories we have about the cosmology, about how it all came about. So given these elements, these three basic elements and witnessing integrity we call God and person, so what has happened in the universe? What actually did occur before we could speak of all this this culture and evolution, these products, all this sophistication? In the beginning, when there was no creation, there was no time, no space, no matter, and the consciousness, the entirety of the universe, the integrity or God Himself, was thus more or less asleep. It must have been there because nothing can sprout from nothing. But there was an integrity that you could consider asleep. There was no differentiation of time, space, and matter. There was just the singularity of God to Himself, the integrity of the elements that were not differentiated at all. So there was a slumbering God, so to speak. That is how the scriptures describe it, and it's an acceptable philosophical vantage point. You can reason from that. The Big Bang suddenly proved that the universe awakened. There was the movement of time, spacing out material elements, so that the three elements we just discussed all together were there. This was the first phase in which the material elements, the fragments of that Big Bang, were just a potency of matter, just a primary potency. We call it dark matter. Einstein called it space-time, or the primal ether. According to Einstein, there would be different types of ether. There's the primal ether, which is the original ether, which describes the expansion of the universe right after the Big Bang, and it's still working. There's still a proof of it in the form of the redshift in the light spectrum. The Hubble redshift is a certain effect in the universe, which is considered the proof of the fact that the universe is expanding. So this expanding universe is in fact the operation of the primal ether, the operation of the primal expansion of space, of undifferentiated matter. That's just what the Indians call pradana, the dark matter, which is not condensed into stars and planets and no living beings at all. It's just the pure potency, the pure material potency of undifferentiated matter. This is the first phase of creation. We see the canvas come about, and the brushes and the paint are ready. There is matter, there is space, there is time, although just linear. There's no cyclic time. It's just the linear time dissipating the entire potency over all the space that came about. So that was the primal phase, but there's something happened to that ball of energy, which expanded without, in fact, a bang. Or yes, maybe we now know the differences that we can describe as a bang. But there was just space created with a material potency and a linear concept of time. There was no creation happening. So this could not be, because one force calls for the other. This is a basic law of the universe. If you have darkness, you have light. If you have matter, you have non-matter or space. If you have time, there is also no time, which is the original slumber of God. When there's no time, there's no creation, there's no matter. That's the singularity, where there's no time and or no differentiation of time, space, and matter. So to this expansion, there's a counterforce. And when there's expansion, there's also contraction. And also the scientists agree to that. It can be different. There is expansion and there's contraction in the universe. This contraction, this crushing of the potency onto itself, is what we call the gravity, and gravity is responsible for creating planets and stars. So in fact, what happened was that this primal ball of energy, this pradhana on the primal ether, met its own consequence. It lost its balance. In fact, there's evenness in the universe, even numbers. You can describe it mathematically as even numbers, caring for a proper balance of that original ether, where no creation takes place. But there's also unevenness in the universe. There's also prime numbers and the uneven. And from that unevenness in the universe, because you cannot have the even without the uneven, no mathematician can say that there's something like an absence of non-even of prime numbers. Or there's also the duality in numbers. If you have a 2, you have also a 3. And to divide 3 in 2 in absolute elements, that gives an imbalance. And there is an imbalance of to the uneven number, which is responsible for the dynamics of the universe, finally, because this unevenness wants to put itself to an end, wants to become even again, which is then resulting in the movement of that primordial energy, and that energy is then starts moving. It starts flowing towards itself, towards a point, towards a center, and this movement towards the center is the exact opposite of the expansion. It is in fact the contraction that leads back to the singularity of the slumbering God, of the God that is asleep, that has no creation, and that is not really present. So this is what happened. From that primal potency, that ball of energy started to move and separated its energies into a cyclic gravitational field, which we now call the universal ether. The ether is in fact just space, describing a certain material quality of content. So this content was just a ball of fire to begin with, pure material potency attracted to itself, started lighting up, and this gives a kind of golden egg, a kind of integrity, which is in Sanskrit called the Brahmanda. The original scriptures speak about this in their stories of creation, that the original energy of God, like a bird laying eggs, God created different eggs of universes, golden eggs. They are the oldest, undifferentiated, but lightning, heating phenomena of gravity. So in this heating, there's a vortexing of energy, a cycling effect, because time non-linear submit to as a function of gravity becomes cyclic. It starts spinning because the expansion still exists. It seeks a balance between expansion and contraction, and thus in that golden egg, just like in a real egg, before it hatches, an embryo comes about. So life and planets and stars started to condense in that cloud of energy. And this were galaxies created as the manifestation of the primal potency subject to the forces of the universal ether, as a counterforce to the expansion of the linear time-space ether. So we have different types of ether, and this is what Einstein, the old Einstein, confirmed. Because we have a young Einstein who says, "Well, there is no ether because we cannot prove the ether from a lack of evidence that the light speed would differ from any experiment that we know. So we cannot prove the ether exists." That was the old Einstein. But in 1920, there was a new Einstein with a new theory of ether. Who said, "Well, there is an ether, but it is just space with material qualities, because you cannot imagine space without any matter in it." He acknowledged that, and but he also added to that this ether must be taken relative. It's not just the simple medium permeating everything; it is differentiated, and that is confirmed by classical scripture. The classical scripture says there is Vishnu in three forms, and Vishnu is the original Mahavishnu, also called Karanodakashayi Vishnu, who is the one of the Pradhana, the original ball of energy of dark matter, just expanding like time space, like one original dimension, and the counterforce of gravity created a second kind of ether, which is the universal ether, and that is the exact opposite. So time, space, and matter, they influence each other in such a manner that we find a relativity of ether, a relativity of space, one space countering being the opposite of the other space. So we have time space and we have universal space, the normal space we know between stars and which constitute the island, the broken egg, which has a mountain in the middle, which the original scriptures also describe, and which we can these days observe by telescopes. These telescopes show us that we can see either universes in the form of an egg, an egg-shaped universe, a kind of golden egg. So God would be a bird laying eggs. It's a bit of funny, but it's more... the scriptures don't describe it that way, but it's eggs. And sometimes these eggs break up into what happens when you break an egg. You have yolk in the middle, and that egg yolk is that mountain, a golden mountain in the middle, with spiral arms around it, because that's how the cookie crumbled, that's how the egg breaks. And so we have a universe as a broken egg, as with a mountain in the middle, a mountain of stars, a golden mountain. And this mountain in the classical scriptures is called Mount Meru. So this is not just a mythological abstract allegorical, mystical thing. No, it's very concrete, very concrete elevation in the middle of galaxies, which you can observe by means of telescopes. So this makes the classical scriptures more scientific than anyone would have thought, because of recent discoveries in the 20th century. We discovered that we are part of galaxies, and with increasing capacities of the telescopes, we realized that we are just one little island, one little egg in the total cosmic totality of all these eggs forming galaxies. So we have two types of ether, two types of space. And there's also a third type of space, a third type of ether, which more describes the balance of these forces. In the balancing of these forces within the universes, local orders are created, describing a type of spin for themselves of moons around planets and planets around the sun, which are little eggs to themselves again, little eggs who also differentiate and break up into an egg yolk like our sun in the middle, and a plane, the equatorial plane, wherein the planets spin, describing about the same as on the galactic level. So we have three levels of creation. We have this time-space level, we have this universal level of creation, and we have this local level of creation. So, and this is also described in the Vedic culture as the three Vishnus, called Karanadakashayi Vishnu, who is also Mahavishnu, Garbhodakashayi Vishnu, the one who is in the universal sea, dreaming his creator from the lotus that came from his navel, so to speak. And we have the Kshiradakashayi Vishnu, which is the local eater, which is the common eater as we know it. We use it with the radio. It's the radio eater. It's the curved space around stars and planets, which is an eater to itself, which is more the result of the balance of forces in which we find our lives as integrities who started to move and respond like to that primal duality of the universe, and that primal duality making light and darkness, making the energy move in impulses. And thus we see creation with its energy on the move. We see in that pulse of creation, that alternation of light and darkness, we see living beings come about who also alternate with a rhythm, a beating heart, and an circulation of blood in the body, which are simply small reflections of the entire universe. And so what the Bible says has meaning. It is confirmed by modern science that indeed we are created after that original integrity of the universe. We are also little suns with a heart in the middle and a circulation of blood around it. And this is a reflection of the entire integrity of the universe. So we are small persons to the relatively cosmic person, the big person of that covers us all. So this big person, this big integrity of the time, space, matter thing we call nature, is us in a small universe of individual realizations and strivings. So this makes sense. And there's something more to it. You may also wonder why we speak in this context of 7 days. Why would the Bible say that we were created in 7 days? Well, the 7 days we see in the universe to our creation is the 7 days that the moon makes relative to the Earth. And this is not an invention of me or anyone else. We see that the moon has different appearances. The moon appears as dark, as full, or as half, and the time between these different phases of the moon is 7 days. So we originated as sentient beings of consciousness to the as a persons to the complete, aware of a 7-day rhythm. We were created to these 7 days, with these 7 days, in these 7 days. So the Bible is correct. We were created in 7 days in a concept of order consisting of a regularity of about 7 days. Not exactly, because it's a little bit more than 7 days. In fact, the lunar month takes 29 and a half days to make a full cycle around the Earth, which is called a lunation, which is the actual lunar year. The lunar spin around the Earth is a lunar year, takes 29 and a half days. But adding it up to a solar year, we have 12 of those moons, full moons in a solar year, which we also divide in 12. But then we have two types of month. These two types of month give us a lot of trouble because, the moon doesn't quite fit into the sun. You have now lunar years around the world, in respected with lunar solar calendars, and we have solar years around the world with solar divisions of the year. And as we discussed before, time awareness, time consciousness, which is by natural law the true consciousness we are after in our scientific endeavors and in our phalagnostic endeavor at this site, we say that the balance of forces presents us with this dual nature of the sun and the moon, and we have to respect both of them to speak of a time consciousness. A consciousness always consists of two parts, and if you speak of time consciousness, we have more or less a big hand and a small hand, a minute hand, and which is the moon dividing the year in 12. We have a big hand, which is the sun, describing in a very much slower tempo the entire spin of the sun around the galaxy center. So, and that is the bigger picture. The smaller picture is just the sun as the center of spin for the Earth. So, in fact, we have a big hand, a small hand, and a plate from which we read our time. So this is time consciousness. We have two elements, the sun and the moon, and they give us the self-awareness as living beings created, conditioned by that original order into what we are, into representatives of the complete, into expansions of that original lordship, the original integrity of the universe. So this is the creation, and this is what I wanted to talk about today. This is what we should know about the integrity of science and religion, both adding up to the same reality that we live in. I thank you for your attention.